I'm going to move away from LQAS now a little bit and talk about three different sampling methods that are commonly used in developing country situations that you may end up being involved with, or at least you'll hear about. And so those three methods are the EPO, the WHO EPI 30 cluster survey that's used often, systematic random sampling, and segmentation. And I don't have any relationships to disclose. So public health surveys, as most of you probably know, are generally used to estimate coverage of public health interventions. We usually like to know the prevalence of diseases or conditions. This is really loud. And also knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors of the population, as well as risk factors. And throughout this talk, I'm going to use an example of a coverage survey that we did in the Himalayas of Nepal. In this survey, we wanted to estimate vaccination coverage with the routine vaccination program, which is generally estimated among children aged 12 to 23 months, as well as campaign coverage estimated among children 6 months to 15 years among the general population. So household surveys are good for this because clinic-based surveys tend to be biased. Clinic-based surveys are only among children who attend clinics, so those who have no access are excluded from the surveys. And also administrative data, where they count the number of vaccines given and divide by the population, can be unreliable, mostly because the population estimates are not often known very well. So the best option statistically for a survey would be a simple random sample, where you list out all the children in the country and you randomly select them and you go to all their houses. Unfortunately, that's not really very feasible in the real world. So best option statistically and statistically and feasibility-wise would be a cluster survey. But keep in mind that when a cluster survey is done, you have to factor in the design effect because there's similarity of people within the clusters. So for a cluster survey, usually for immunization coverage and for most other cluster surveys, we use 30 clusters. And that's because on studies that have looked at how much bang you get for your buck on adding clusters, it peaks around 30. You get a little bit more, but it's asymptotic. So generally, clusters are selected probability proportional to size. So the districts, for example, that are larger have more chance of selection. And systematic random sampling is then used to select the clusters. And I'm just briefly going to go through systematic random sampling for the selection of clusters for those of you who haven't done it. So generally what you do is you list out the number, the population size for each of your, in this case, VDC, which is part of a district. Then you add those together all the way down so you get the cumulative sample size for the entire country. And you divide that by 30 to get your sampling interval. And then you select a random number between 1 and that sampling interval to know where to start. In this case, we selected 175. So you take 175 and you add the sampling interval over and over again until you end up with 30 numbers between 1 and the total number of people in the sampling frame, in this case, the country. Those are your selected numbers that you then fit to the districts and to the VDCs that they apply. So for example, the first VDC has 1,248 children, so any number between 1 and 1,248 will be mapped to that district, to that VDC. So the first selected cluster is in that VDC. The second selected cluster is in the next VDC. You can see 1,444 is in between 1,249 and the next number cumulatively, and so on until you've mapped all of your selected numbers. So now you'll know how many, if you see the cluster list, you'll see how many clusters are in each VDC. So then once you have your cluster selected, and that's pretty much standard across all three of these methods, The difference comes in how the households are selected within those clusters. And the three main household selection methods that I'm going to talk about are the EPI 30 cluster survey, systematic random sampling, and segmentation, which is actually just a special case of systematic random sampling. The 30 cluster survey was developed and popularized by WHO in the 1970s and has been shown to be really feasible in a wide variety of settings. The standard sample size is usually 30 by 7, which gives you enough sample to estimate coverage at plus or minus 10% with a design effect of 2 at 50% coverage, which requires the largest sample size. It's nice because you don't need population sample size estimates within your clusters. And you also don't need to have any mapping. Thousands of these have been done successfully, both to estimate routine coverage for vaccinations as well as for other outcomes over the years. Generally, selection of the first household is that an interviewer will go to the center of the cluster and they'll spin a bottle or a pen to determine the direction of the first households to be selected. So here's our cluster, here's all of our houses, the bottle is spun and you get your direction. Now along that direction, you count the number of houses in that direction and you randomly select out of a hat the first one to start at. In this case, it was number 3, the third house along the line. So subsequent houses with EPI sampling is that you go to the next nearest household, which is called proximity sampling, until 7 eligible children are identified. So that makes it a quota sample. So here's our selected house, and we'll go to the nearest house and keep going into the nearest house until, say, this is the group of houses that were needed to be interviewed to identify these 7 children in our sampling in our age range, 12 to 23 months. So EPI surveys have some real benefits. They're very feasible. They have a predictable sample size. Every cluster is going to have 7 children, regardless of what's done, because you keep going until you get 7. The problems, though, however, are that they really aren't a probability sample. There's not a known non-zero probability of being selected for every child. And more important than that, is that all of the households are selected from one part of the cluster. So if there's clustering of an outcome, you're gonna pick all kids who either were vaccinated or weren't vaccinated if there's a lot of variability by area. And even more critical is that there's bias toward the center. And there's two reasons that there's bias toward the center. First is that when you spin that bottle to determine a directional line from the center, you can have a variety of directions that you identify. But as you can see, most of those, the households that are toward the center are going to be closer to more directional lines than the houses that are at the edge. So the houses in the center are more likely to fall in that first selected household. Example, this house is on 2 of the directional lines, whereas many of the houses out in the periphery aren't along any of these lines. In addition, as you select your households that you've covered, you can see that when you go to the next nearest household, in most situations, houses get closer together as you get to the center of a community. So whichever house you started with, you're going to end up moving toward the center. Even if you start with one sort of at the edge, you'll end up moving toward the center. And by the time you look at all the different possible choices, you can see that those houses in the center are almost always selected. So that's even not a problem in itself, unless there's a difference in the likelihood of vaccination living in the center versus living on the edge. If the health center, for example, happens to be in the center of town, which is usually the case, children that live near that health center who may be more likely to be vaccinated are also going to be more likely to be in your survey, and so you're going to have a biased estimate of coverage. So the next sampling method that I'm going to talk about is systematic random sampling. And there's a couple of ways to do systematic random sampling. You can do it mapping, where you go and you map out all the houses in your cluster first, and then on paper you systematically choose every 4th house, for example. But in an area where you have to walk a really long way, that could be that could end up doubling your sampling time, depending on the situation. If you can drive and in a reasonable amount of time map out those houses, that's a good idea. But otherwise, mapping isn't really needed. You can do systematic random sampling ad hoc in the field, just counting as you go. With systematic sampling without mapping, you select your houses by going to every Xth house. And X is the sampling interval. So, for example, if you have a cluster that has that you think has about 20 children, and you need 10 children for your sample, you would go to every other house, and you would cover the entire sampling area to try and get your sample size. So, for example, if we have 14 children in our cluster and we needed 7, our sampling interval will be 2, and we'll go to every second household. So our interviewer will come to the cluster, will arrive at the edge of the cluster. He doesn't have to walk all the way to the center for this method. And among the first 2 households, he'll draw from a hat to decide which one to go to first. So in this case, he drew number 2, so he goes to the second house. And then he'll wander throughout the entire cluster to every other house in the entire cluster until he has conversed the entire cluster. He doesn't stop when he gets to a certain number. It's not a quota sample. In this case, he found 8 children. So in some cases, you'll find more. In some cases, you'll find less than your target sample size, and that's OK. On average, as you merge all of the clusters together, you hope to at least have your minimum sample size. So there's some pros and cons to systematic random sampling also. The pros are that it is a probability sample. There's a known probability of selection of each child. In this case, each child had a 50% chance of selection because you went to every other house. That chance of selection, of course, has to then be multiplied by the chance of you going to this cluster, which is true for all of these methods. There's really no inherent bias as long as the interviewers do a good job of going to every other house. And it's actually very feasible. The interviewers only have to go through the cluster once, but they do have to walk the entire cluster. So it can be time consuming. Although we found that even in the Afar, in the most difficult area of Ethiopia, in the desert, people can do an entire cluster in a day. So households are selected over a wide area, which is good. However, there is an unpredictable sample size, and especially if you don't have a good idea of how many children are in your cluster, you can get more or less than your sample size that you wanted. So you do need a rough estimate of the population estimate. Segmentation, the general idea is to divide your cluster into about the number of areas that you need to so that each one is about the right size. And then you randomly select one of those segments, and you go to all households in that segment. And it's really a special case of systematic random sampling where your sampling interval is 1. You've just cut down your area to the size that's needed. In this case, for example, say there's a road that goes down our village, and we randomly select half of them, and we go to all the houses in that half. And in this case, we would get 5 children instead of our 7 that we wanted. So again, it's a probability sample. There's no inherent bias. It's very feasible. You only have to walk through half of the village. However, all households are selected from that one segment. And again, you have unpredictable sample sizes, and you need a rough population estimate. So a few further considerations that are sort of beyond these sampling methods that I think are really important to keep in mind because they sometimes are more important than the sampling method. One is, what to do if you have a household with multiple children that fit into your age range. So that doesn't usually happen if you're looking at children 12 to 23 months, but if you're looking at children 6 months to 15 years, that often happens. And there's a number of options. You can use all the children in the household. However, they'll be clustering within the household. You can select one child either randomly or take the youngest child, which WHO recommends that I think is kind of not a great idea because that can be biased. And either way, if you choose one child, you have to then weight that child based on how many children were in the household. What I usually like to do is to take all children, but only count that house as one, so that you're bumping up your sample size. By the time you're at the house, it doesn't really take that much more time to get information on all the children, but you get more information. Another big problem is response rates, either people that refuse, which is not very common in developing countries, I think, but oftentimes people won't be home, and do you revisit the household, and how do you find that house again when there's no addresses, that kind of issue. And finally, there's the exclusion of what's called inaccessible areas. Oftentimes when people do a survey, they say, oh, it's really too hard to get to that place. And you ask them, well, do you actually vaccinate children there? And they say, oh yeah, we go there to vaccinate. And it's like, well, if you can go there to vaccinate, you can go there to do a survey. But it might be really, really difficult. For example, the road might be washed out in a flood. Or you may have to do a lot of hiking through the mountains, in this case, in Nepal. So, we're going backward here. I guess I'll go this way, maybe. I'll left click. Oh, here's a good one. So, you know, here's a village that would be hard to get interviewers to go to because it's so difficult to reach. So what can you do about inaccessible areas? Well, you can limit the number of them, which is great, and then report what you did, as well as a sensitivity analysis. So you can assume, you know, what would have happened if coverage was half in the inaccessible areas as it was in the places we went to, and then figure out what your coverage would be. If there's very few children there, it's not going to affect your overall average very much. But just keep in mind that children that are difficult to access don't have very good access to services, so they're likely to have lower coverage for the services than the children that are easy to reach. And finally, something that's really important is inaccurate or incomplete data. So we often, with vaccination coverage surveys, we try to get their vaccination cards. If they don't have cards, we use parental recall. And we found that both of those can be very incomplete. And if possible, confirmation from another source, such as going to the health center and looking at their logbooks to see what children were vaccinated, can be really helpful. And then there's the whole interviewer issue of, you know, are interviewers well-trained? Do they go and sit under a tree and fill out their questionnaires? Selection of households, if that interviewer looks over that gorge with the river and they see that house way over there in the distance all by itself, are they really likely to go visit that house? I guess I probably wouldn't be very likely myself, and these houses as well. And not only houses that are hard to get to, but also sometimes the marginalized people in the society, the people that don't live in an official village, or people that live in the slums, oftentimes are missed. So in summary, we have, I know I'm out of time, but this is the summary slide. So we've got sort of the benefits and problems of each type of survey. They're all three cluster surveys. EPI 30 cluster is not a probability sample, although the other two are, the same way with being unbiased. Systematic random sampling is the only one of the three that has a dispersed sample. And EPI 30 cluster survey does have a predictable sample size, and all of them are feasible. So which one do you use? It depends on the situation. If you only need a low precision of plus or minus 10%, then any of them are probably fine, because your bias from EPI sample probably isn't as great as that imprecision. But if you need a high precision, like you're comparing two areas, or improvement in an area, or maybe an intervention, then really you need to have a more precise sampling method. If you have rough sample estimates of the population, all of them will work. If you have no rough estimate of the population and you don't think you can get it when you go to the cluster, you can't ask somebody how many children there are in that village, then really EPI is the only way to go. So that's it.